10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Sterling every damn night. I'm Casey Bartholomew. I am sitting in. We're going to talk about Trump and the Straits of Hormuz, Detroit, and a bunch of other stuff right after a check of weather with Dr. Dave on Sterling every damn night.
It's Casey Bartholomew. He's better than Phil Donahue. And he's on Sterling every damn night.
It's Sterling every damn night. I'm Casey Bartholomew. I'm sitting in for Walter Sterling tonight on Sterling every damn night. Got a bunch of stuff we want to get to tonight. President Trump has announced that the U.S. will begin a sweeping blockade of the Straits of Hormuz, vowing to fight back against Iran's world extortion and ensure that no one paying tolls to the regime will get through the critical oil checkpoint. This is United Arab Emirates. I said the other day or earlier today that the Straits of Hormuz are not Iran's to, it's not Iran's to govern. It's not Iran's to control. It's international waters, basically, is what they said. So even annoying their regional neighbors, as it were. I've said this many times. Not all the every night for Walter, obviously. But I've been on multiple times ever since this war got going. And I say all the time. The Straits of Hormuz is always the thing. Why don't we carpet bomb the sumbitch and then be done with it? Let's take everything out within the general vicinity of the Iranian side of the Straits and be done. Now, I will allow that I am, I've been in radio since I was a very young teenager. So my worldview on things isn't based on military experience. It's based upon sitting behind a microphone and reading stuff. But I still don't understand why that's a problem. Now, I want to hear your take on this. If you want to give us a call tonight, it's 855-839-1210. It's 855-839-1210. Now, Trump claimed that negotiations with Iran that concluded Saturday without a deal went well. How do they go well if you're not a deal? If they're still talking about, you can't believe anything that comes out of the mouth of Iran, anybody in Iran. You can't believe it because they are liars, because they lie constantly about everything. It's all about angling. For some reason, in that part of the world, it's all about angling. Oh, we fought back the evil imperialist bastards in America. Whatever. Just give us our cheap gas. That's all we care about. And by the way, I'm fine with that. I'm perfectly fine with that. Oil makes the world go round. Not love, not smiles, not hugs, not joy. None of that crap. I need my car to go. When I need it, I need to be able to fill up with gas when I need it. That's what makes the world go around. Even if we all had electric cars, we would still need the oil. So shut up, you hippies. Anyway, I don't know why we don't just level them and be gone. I don't know what's on the straits on the Iranian side. I know they got little speedboats. I know they still got mines. We've been basically destroying their infrastructure on the inside. But for some reason, the coast, maybe they're worried about, I don't know, lone wolf attack, something like that. I don't know. But still, I don't know why we don't just level it. But Trump said the talks that concluded last night with nothing solved went well. But he did fault the Islamic Republic for refusing to budge on its nuclear program, which is the only point that really mattered. Well, I will question that. I do think it is a point that matters. I don't think it is the point that matters. I don't think it's the only, but I think that's one of the points. I need my cheap gas. And yes, I am willing to allow the president carte blanche to bomb the crap out of the place if I get cheap gas. Is that wrong? It feels wrong to say a lot, but I'm going to sleep at night. It's okay. Now, according to Trump, he posted on Truth Social today, effective immediately, the United States Navy, the finest in the world. That's right. We'll begin the process of blockading any and all ships trying to enter or leave the Strait of Hormuz. At some point, we will reach an all being allowed to go in, all being allowed to go out basis. But Iran has not allowed that to happen by merely saying there may be mines out there somewhere that nobody knows about them. This is world extortion. Yeah. The leaders of countries, especially the United States of America, will never be extorted. No one who pays an illegal toll will have safe passage on the high seas. Now, Iran issued a warning. They like rattlesabers, but what are they going to do? I mean, I guess they have small boats and they do have some armory left, so they can still do damage. But Iran warned also today that military vessels approaching the Strait of Hormuz would be a violation of the fragile ceasefire and face a strong and forceful response following Trump's announcement of the blockade. Trump announced plans earlier today. Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps Navy. I didn't have a Navy anymore. Their Navy was dead. I saw them go boom. I thought their Navy was dead. But it says it is insisting it has full control of the strait and that the waterway remains open for non-military vessels. Contrary to the false claims of certain enemy officials. I wonder who they could be talking about. The Strait of Hormuz is open for passage of non-military vessels under smart control and management. What does that mean? In accordance with specific regulations, the naval forces said in a statement, according to two semi-official Iranian news agencies. Do you work for the official Iranian news agency? No, I work for the semi-official. I mean, you know, it's a touch and go there sometimes. But I think the smart control and management, I mean, that's the tolls. The IRCG, that's Iran, warned that any approach by military vessels toward the strait would be treated as a violation of the ceasefire agreement. Trump claimed that the ceasefire deal last week meant that Iran would allow the Strait of Hormuz, where over a fifth of the world's seaborne oil supplies flow through annually, to be reopened. But Iran has been accused of attempting to charge tolls on vessels and claimed that it lost track of the mines it laid down. You know how it is with mines. You never know where they are. You never know where they're going. So yeah, we've lost control of those. That's what happened. Now, on the idea of oil prices, the price of oil surged this evening after Trump made his declaration and Iran shouted their empty threats. U.S. crude oil soared 8% to more than $104 per barrel. International Brent oil, I don't know what that is, jumped more than 7% to $103 per barrel. Wholesale gas prices spiked 6%, while heating oil, a proxy for jet fuel prices, jumped 10% in early trading. And those prices will go up immediately. I'm not the first person to mention this. But they play so fast and loose and, what's the word? Lie. When it comes to the price of oil and crude, it's like the price of oil goes up. And oh my God, we got to raise the prices immediately. Oh my God, we got to raise $1,000 again. Oh my God, we got to raise the prices immediately. This is crazy. The price of oil goes down. And it's like, it's going to take a little time to get that, you know, to get the price of oil back. We're just going to have to, if it even does go down, it's going to take time. Oh, okay. But it went up. Oh, we got to shoot those prices up right now. As quick as we can type it into the machine and get it in there, we're going to get that stuff taken care of. And yeah, but I've like I said before, I'm going to defer to military people. When you're talking about military information and military exercises, military people are like way at the top and radio talk show hosts are way, we just blathering on idiots. That's what most of us are. And, but I will defer to them, but I don't see any reason why we can't just go in there, take over the strait forever. I mean, go in there and take that little slice of Iran and just take it. And that will be the end of that. And we'll run it and they can do their little terrorist attack. And yeah, that will cost lives and things will happen. But ultimately, a little ridiculously psychopathic nation won't be able to control the world's oil prices and damage us that way because their military is severely damaged. Their Navy is mostly gone. Their leader, I guess, looks like the Elephant Man now. I don't know. They say he was disfigured. Little Ayatollah. I'm not an animal. Sitting there, something like doing stuff like that. So he's a disfigured freak show now. He'll go work in the circus. But either way, after all that stuff is said and done, we can control the strait. We can get a military presence there, which I am perfectly fine with. And everybody who says they aren't perfectly fine with is lying like a liar. because that would make sure that everything was free and clear, and then we wouldn't be held captive by the freaks in Iran. But anyway, if you want to comment on that, I'll be happy to take phone calls, 855-839-1210. Also, when we come back, we're going to get into how they're trying to convince people to move to Detroit. As somebody who has lived in Detroit, I'm going to tell you, don't even drive through Detroit. I don't care if it's the middle of the most beautiful summer day you've ever seen. Do not drive through Detroit. It's probably less safe than the Strait of Hormuz right now, but we'll talk about that coming up. My name is Casey Bartholomew. I'm sitting in for Walter Sterling. You're listening to Sterling every damn night.
Lesbians in space, Sterling every damn night.
Wow, I wish there was somewhere in York for inexperienced lesbians which was accessible by bus.
Who? In trouble? Details later, strippers on the loose. Sterling, every damn night.
Florida is a beautiful mix of diverse people and cultures. Florida Stories is about them getting arrested. I'm James Parker, Florida Stories, still to come on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Hi, I'm retired detective Vic Ferrari. And on tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I give you a behind-the-scenes look into an NYPD precinct break room. What are you going to find in there? Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
This is Matthias Bohm-Bell. Coming up, my Hollywood report on movies, live on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Parking lot beeping. Details later, the people of Walmart. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sometimes it's nice to hear an old guy complaining on the radio.
Sterling every damn night, every damn night.
It's Sterling every damn night. I'm Casey Bartholomew. I'm sitting in. You want to join the show? It's 855-839-1210 is the number here. That's 855-839-1210. I wanted to share the story. It caught my eye because I used to live in this, I can't say what it is on the air, but crap hole. Let's put it that way. Detroit. I've lived in many places. Radio, a very nomadic business for those of us who aren't very good at it. And I've lived in Detroit. I worked in Detroit for a few years. And you didn't go there at night if you could avoid it, unless there was like a hockey game or something going on or a baseball game, because then there were crowds of people around, right? But if you just, oh, I left my wallet at that restaurant and you needed to drive down there, just let it go. Cancel the cards and let it go. Get a new license because it's not a safe place. Well, now, and they also declared bankruptcy because it's a horrible, horrible place. But a Detroit coalition is rolling out cash incentives of up to $15,000 to attract new residents and retain current ones as part of a broader push to spur economic growth in the city. The biggest problem with this stuff is that if you take the $15,000 to live in Detroit, then you have to live in Detroit. And there's no redeeming quality to Detroit. None. Zero. In the summer, it stays light outside like till like 10 o'clock. It was horrible. The summers are unbearably hot and the winters are unbearably cold. It was just an awful place. But the program dubbed Make Detroit Home for Stupid People will award more than $500,000 in benefits to over 300 participants, according to Move Detroit, the coalition that's doing this, which launched the program. They include entrepreneurs, creatives, and small business owners, as well as current residents, former Detroiters, and newcomers willing to relocate. These are people on drugs. These are people who didn't finish junior high school. Don't move to Detroit. The initiative offers stipends of up to $15,000 to help cover home down payments, renovations, rent, or business expenses. Does it let you use the money to buy drugs? Because that's most of what is purchased in Detroit. It's drugs. Or guns. I guess bullets, too, that those go hand in hand. But either way, that's what you have to spend the money on if you go to Detroit. What's funny, I was watching the CBS Sunday Morning Show. I like that show. And I was watching that this morning. And they were talking about people moving to Topeka It was Topeka, Kansas. And it was it was all a bunch of, you know, Midwesterners. And it's like, oh, the slower lifestyle. And, oh, the house that is here is $400,000. But in, you know, Northern California, where some of these freaks were moving from, it was a $1 million house. So you can get so much more. And we'll give you I don't remember what the number was, but we'll give you thousands of dollars to come move here. And wrap my mind around that one. I'm sure there are gangs in Topeka. I don't know what. Hillbilly gang? I don't know what the hell's in Topeka. But I'm sure there's some sort of gang there. And I'm sure that's not always as beautiful and nice. But it is never nice in Detroit. It's never a good place to go, as evidenced by the fact that they have to pay you $15,000 to move there. And you're to put your life and your family's life in danger just to move to Detroit. And they think, I guess, if you survive, maybe the reasoning is, if we can get enough stupid people to agree to take $15,000 and move to Detroit, if we get enough of them, the gang members and the drug dealers will take pity on them and they won't murder them in the street. Maybe that's the thinking there. And then if enough stupid people come in, the gang members and such won't want to waste their time selling drugs to stupid people because it's not fun. There's no sport in it. Then they'll just move on to some other city. I think it's probably the logic there. The problem is there's not enough money in the world to convince anybody with half a brain to move to Detroit. And yes, as I say that, I admit I moved to Detroit. I actually lived in a suburb called Novi. But I actually moved to Detroit. I lived there and it was awful. The first day I was there, I knew it was awful. I was like, oh, crap, I screwed this one up. I lived there for a while. I lived there for a few years. It was awful. We didn't go to Detroit because we didn't want to get murdered. I'm feigning ignorance here, okay? I'm pretending that I was too stupid to look on the internet and see if Detroit was a safe place. All I saw was the money they were throwing at me and the size of the place. And I thought, oh, this will be great. Oh, Michigan is a beautiful, big state. And I didn't realize that I was in the one part of Michigan that was a cesspool of gangs, drugs, and murder. So if you're going to take the $15,000, just know you're playing a fun little game of Russian roulette. Detroit roulette. We're going to take a big steaming pile of cash and you're going to go, oh, this is awesome. This is so cool. And think of the exhilaration and the fun every day when the kids come home from school. If they don't get murdered at school, maybe they'll get murdered on the way home from school. And if they don't, it'll be so, think of the exhilaration and how tough they'll feel when they make it home from school. So I guess what I'm trying to say is don't take the money. If they're offering you money to move to North Korea, I would move to North Korea before I would move to Detroit, of all godforsaken places. All right. When we come back, we're going to, oh, I like this. I like talking to Mateus. We're going to talk to Mateus and we're going to talk about Hollywood, end of the box office weekend, all that kind of stuff. And that's all going to be coming up in just a few minutes. I'm Casey Bartholomew and you are listening to Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling Every Damn Night. Every Damn Night. We got 3 hours of Sterling waiting for you. Every damn night. Every damn night. It's the world's greatest show. It's true. Sterling. Every damn night.
True by every damn night. Every damn night.
Whatever your shape, sex, or creed, Walter's got just what you need. Every damn night.
True by every damn night.
Sterling every damn night.
Hey, Casey Bartholomew sitting in for Walter Sterling on Sterling Every Damn Night. Every time I fill in, I love talking to this guy. It's Mateus, our man in Hollywood, to tell us everything that's going on. Hey, how you doing, Mateus? Been a while.
I'm pretty good. I'm envisioning as I listen to the program tonight, you've described Detroit the way I remember it in the movie Detroit Rock City. Do you remember that movie?
It's worse.
It was just like a huge party in the street.
No.
It was just total mayhem.
It wasn't a party. It was a gun. It was like when I say Detroit, think like the Old West, right? Before there were laws. Yeah. You know, that's that because in Detroit, laws are more suggestions. They're really things that they deal with. But at least it was when I lived there, you know, so we didn't go to Detroit too often. So we stayed in our safe little suburb.
Traffic in Mexico, each man for himself.
Exactly. So what is going on in the world of entertainment?
Well, you mentioned box office before, so I feel obligated to share about that because, you know, it seems that people like to play with numbers and they're into numbers. It's like sports, you know, who are the scores, keeping on top of the scores. People love numbers. I don't know. I like movies, but they have numbers, like, and the numbers are huge still for the Super Mario Galaxy movie, the number one movie in the country. This movie has made just in the U.S. and Canada, I'm not talking about worldwide, just in the U.S. and Canada, Casey, $308 million in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, this thing is made. It is the top grossing film of the year. It made back its $1 million cost times three already, or times two at least.
Wait, it only cost $1 million to
make? Universal Picture. Yeah. Yeah. And believe it or not, about $110
million. Oh, $100 million. Well, okay, you said animated. $1 million. I was like, $1 million?
No. $110 million. $110 million. Okay. And now they've made, $308 million, and across they passed the $300 million mark last week globally. So Universal is feeling pretty good sitting there in Universal City in Burbank now. Things are pretty rosy for them.
Yeah, that's a sequel. I didn't see the first one, so I don't know what the appeal of these movies. I know that Mario and everything because I grew up in the Mario era, but.
You did. Yes, I wish I had taken you. You could explain it all to me because I didn't get it.
Well,
there's a young princess that's stolen away in the Mario Brothers, Luigi and Mario.
Yeah, I skipped all those parts. When you play the video game, it goes through all of the princess. I didn't care about that, so I would skip all that stuff, and I would just go play the game.
Yeah.
So I didn't know.
Right.
So, you know, maybe it's
anyway,
lost
so
something.
I never knew about video games. It's Greek to me, so I can't explain it, but it's big. It's Project Hail Mary. Is still doing well. That's the Ryan Gosling out in space movie.
It was
3 hours too long. It's actually 1 hour too long. It's 3 hours long and 1 hour is unnecessary. However, it is unlike most futuristic space movies, which are dystopian and make you want to just die thinking the world in the future is going to be even worse than it is today. Is that possible?
Isn't the world ending in that movie? Isn't he out there trying to figure out how to make the world not end?
Yeah, well, so that's why Gosling is in space, to use his knowledge and science to stop the sun from depleting and killing the world, causing mass starvation and blah, blah, blah.
But that would suck. Yeah.
This movie actually is a very positive, life-affirming, very human movie that gives you faith in humanity. It's a positive movie in the long run, and it's a great performance from Gosling. So as much as I complain about the running time, and I think justly, it is beautifully photographed, and Gosling is great, and it makes you feel good about humanity. And there haven't been a lot of movies to do that recently, so Project Hail Mary is pretty good.
Yeah, he's getting Oscar buzz right off. It's like, it's too early for Oscar buzz. You know.
No, it's quite likely if people remember it. That's the thing, you know, all the stuff that comes out in the early part of the year is forgotten because the Oscar push is usually in the last 3 months of the year, and everyone forgets what happens at this time of year. And usually in January, that's the worst month for movies because that's where they throw all the dogs they didn't want to show at all up before the Oscars. So you can count on January and February being the real duds.
There you go.
In general. So
Project Hail Mary, that's an anomaly. Shall we say?
Yeah, it's an outer space anomaly at that. It's made $257 million since it opened, which is healthy. The drama's in third place. And the movie I wanted to talk about tonight before we hit the clock, because we're on the network, so we can't talk ad infinitum, Me and Tuscany, which has only made $8 million since Friday, but is the movie I'm talking about. I'm going to say it's a rom-com. No, let's say the much maligned chick flick term. It's the only way to really describe this movie.
Well, that's the movie you take the girl through if you want to get lucky.
Charming.
Yeah.
We don't have to pretend. This is actually funny and enjoyable. Halle Bailey, not Barry. That's the previous generation.
Oh, she was
Halle Bailey. This is a young... That's exactly right. Yeah. The Little Mermaid. And she, on a whim, when she's fired from her house cleaning job in Park Avenue, because she puts on her boss's or the house person's clothes, and they say, no, you don't. So she had wanted to go to Tuscany her whole life with her mom, but mom got sick and died. She had the plane ticket. She meets this Italian man in a hotel. She's at loose ends. She's got nowhere to stay. And he says, I have. He wants to show her stuff in the bedroom. So up the bedroom
sure,
they go.
Yeah.
It wasn't his etchings. It was his picture of his Italian villa and the Italian restaurant in Tuscany and his family restaurant. And so she just gets the idea, since this guy's traveling, I'll just go, you know, house sit for him, whether his family likes it or not. She gets there, and of course, that's all fine and dandy until grandmother and mother show up, and she lies and says she's the man's fiance. They all go nuts for her. They love her. She saves the family, brings them together. It's all fun and roses.
While you were sleeping.
Until the other The other shoe drops being that, one, she falls in love with the cousin, the adopted cousin of the man she met in the New York hotel room, and then the guy from the New York hotel room shows up, and of course the family loves them, and he has to dance around it, and so her little dream world actually does come true. It's very sweet. It's out loud funny. It's in Tuscany, you know, where three times out of the year it's sunny anyway, so it's beautiful people who have no poverty issues at all, having a grand time. And, you know,
it sounds like a reboot of While You Were Sleeping. That's what it sounds like.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
It sounds like they dropped in some names.
Yeah, it's about that. But, you know, I think girls will like it, and I found myself laughing. So, and I usually don't like those kind of movies. So that's Yumi in Tuscany. Yeah. It's playing everywhere across the USA right now.
And it sounds like it's going to follow you. If you want to see it, you better see it soon.
Yeah,
because it's gonna. If it's not making any money, they're not gonna keep it around. Yeah, because there's the what are we in? We're in April. The May movie, the summer movies are gonna start coming out pretty soon.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that.
What do we got on the horizon? The Spider-Man movie coming out.
Yeah, there's one of those, and then there's another superhero movie, which I can't remember because there's so many, it's hard to keep track of them all. But there's some neat... No, I'm serious. There's some neat things to come out. I'll do a summer preview with you in a forthcoming show when I'm prepared.
I just thought you knew everything about entertainment,
The curtain's gone up, and I'm just a charlatan.
Yeah, you just really are. You know, I can go on the interwebs and then do the box office stuff. I don't need you for that. I thought you have insight here, right?
Well, sometimes I do. You know, my friends joke about this, Casey. They say, Matthias knows everything about movies except those that have color and sound. So, you know,
if you ask me about
a silent movie, I know all about it.
I do have a hint of sort of superiority when you did the superhero movies and you like the little rom-com toss. I'm not going to. I like rom-coms.
No.
When Harry Met Sally is one of my favorite movies of all time. So.
I'm telling you, Project Hail Mary was very reaffirming, and that's certainly not a superhero movie, nor is it a rom-com. Yeah. It's sort of a rock-com, and if people have seen it, they'll get that, and you will, too, if you check it out.
I don't know what a rock-com is.
Well, you see, Ryan Gosling makes an alien friend in space. He's basically shaped like a rock.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a pet rock with legs, you know, kind of rock that looks like a spider. So it's a rock-com.
There you go. Okay.
It was my joke. These are the jokes. This is why I didn't excel in that category either.
You ring a bell for me or something, so I know that way I'll let it go. So, all right, is there anything other else entertainment wise that you'd like to share with us?
No, I think that about wraps it up for this week. But it's always a great pleasure to be with you, Casey, and
always
of course the listeners of the great Walter Sterling Show on this station.
We love having you on. All right, Matthias, we'll talk to you next time. All right.
Thank you.
You bet. Matthias, our man in Hollywood, with the latest update for the box office of everything that's going on there. I got to see a Super Mario movie, but then I'd have to sit there and watch a Super Mario movie. I hear they're good. I hear they're good movies. So I'm not like avoiding it for that reason. There's just no, I don't know. There's just no pull to it. I want to see the Ryan Gosling movie, though. Because I like Ryan Gosling. So there he goes, Ken, because he's my spirit animal. All right, when we come back, you know there's a shortage of air traffic controllers, right? That is a job, especially in recent weeks when they're hitting trucks and everything, planes are, and the like, that I have no desire to do, no interest in doing, and they're looking for a particular group to become air traffic controllers, so that you can get on the short list for suicide, I guess, because I think that's what would happen if I did that job. We'll talk to you all about that. That's coming up. 855-839-1210 is the number. My name is Casey Bartholomew. I am sitting in tonight on Sterling every damn night.
The people of Walmart.
Onslow County, North Kakalaki. Yes, North Carolina, for those who are uninitiated. A fine young gentleman named Justin Smith. Justin! Which means, by the way, just one. Not like just one, but just person, just man. Okay. Well, Mr. Smith was spending a lot of time in the Walmart parking lot, as we all do. It's a great place, and sometimes you have experiences in the Walmart parking lot that happened just like this. So Justin apparently was sharking. He was sharking random shoppers. Sharking is, you know, when you drop trow and you show your special purpose there. He got picked up by the police. They're not messing around. People are complaining. He was charged with secret peeping and resisting a police officer. How can you resist a police officer? One would have thought he would have dropped trow and showed him his stuff then, too. Sadly, he did give deputies a wrong name during the investigation. And no, he didn't say his name was Velo Hool. Of course, Velo Hool, that's me. My features are very popular on the nationally syndicated radio show Sterling Every Damn Night, which you're listening to right now. Keep your pants up, and no matter how proud you are of your feller down there, show that off to a lady that's requested it. Make sure they request it. Or you could ask them, do you want to see my special purpose? And if they say yes, well, there you go. But generally not in the parking lot of your neighborhood Walmart. For the people of Walmart, I'm Velo Hool. Sterling, every damn night.
It's Sterling every damn night. I'm Casey Bartholomew. I am sitting in tonight. Give me a call. It's 855-839-1210. That's 855-839-1210. One of the most suicide-inducing jobs that I think exists out there would be an air traffic controller. I always thought I could do it, and I thought it would be fun to try because it seems like it took a certain type of individual. And I didn't really look into it. I just watched TV. That's the extent of my looking into it. And I realized that I was, in fact, not the kind of person who should do that kind of job. I should not do any type of job where if I decide to be a wise ass or forget or make mistakes, people end up dead. Virtually nobody dies if the radio talk show host boy does something stupid. But the FAA on April 17th is going to start accepting applications to alleviate the ongoing shortage the industry faces. The FAA has 11,000 controllers currently working with 4,000 trainees in the pipeline, but needs thousands and thousands more. Thousands and thousands more. Air traffic controllers, where you will, again, suicide, drugs, I don't know. I don't think they do drugs. I think they do a lot of caffeine. Let's put it that way. I think there's a lot of coffee. And, oh, yeah, if you screw up a little bit, literally everybody dies. So you don't want to go doing that. But according to Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, to reach the next generation of air traffic controllers, we need to adapt. This campaign's innovative communication style and focus on gaming taps into a growing demographic of young adults who have many of the hard skills it takes to be a successful air traffic controller. Gamers. These are people who sit down, got those headphones on, scratch themselves, never see the sun. They've never touched a girl. And they sit in their basement and they play video games all day. They want them to be the next generation of air traffic controllers. They are encouraged to level up your career. Get it? on the hiring website, which includes mission requirements and lists technology being rolled out as part of the department's efforts to bring air traffic control system into the 21st century. The website says we are modernizing the sky. I think the sky is good. You don't have to modernize it. The best and brightest controllers leverage the world's most advanced air traffic technology, which we do not have. The agency is amid a multi-year plan to eliminate old technology like floppy disks. Air traffic control, your life depends on a floppy disk. That's what we're looking at right now. That's super. That makes me feel super safe. They also want to get rid of copper wiring and paper flight strips. What's that? Is that deadly? There's not a, if there was a paper flight strip, would that kill me? Sounds like it could. Anyway, if you're like the Super Mario movie is out right now, you should go in there, send the air traffic control people in there, send the transportation people in there, and just start abducting children who like the Super Mario movie, and then take them to a camp, teach them how to be air traffic controllers. They won't know any better. The website promises high score rewards, including paid training, government benefits, and average yearly earnings of $155,000 plus after 3 years of service. But there's that whole killing everybody if you sneeze at the wrong time situation. There's that on the table as well. So that could be problematic, at the very least, shall we say. So if you're a gamer and you want to run the risk of killing people, sounds like it's the job for you. All right, when we come back, they're tweaking the form of reparations. We're going to talk to you about that based out of Chicago here. I'm Casey Bartholomew sitting in on Sterling every damn night.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Hi, Casey Bartholomew sitting in on Sterling every damn night. 855-839-1210 is the number. In just a minute, we're going to talk to you about how reparations are taking a new form, and there's no form of reparations that's good.
It's Casey Bartholomew. He's solving a problem for you. Cause Sterling doesn't actually want to work every damn night.
Casey Bartholomew sitting in on Sterling every damn night. Give us a call, 855-839-1210. That's 855-839-1210. Residents of a Chicago suburb hope its local reparations program could alleviate affordability pressures as the black population dwindles in the city. So they want to pay the money. Now, reparations has been an issue that's gone on for years and years and years and years and years and years and years. And no matter what dress they put on this pig, it's still a pig. I will never, ever, ever, ever be in favor of giving money to something that to people that nothing happened to. You were never a slave. There are no slaves alive today. I would venture that there's nobody alive today who even met a slave in the United States of America. So I don't see any reason why my family didn't even get here until after 1900. My pasty white family didn't show up. My mom's family came out of Iowa. My dad's family came out of Ohio. They met somewhere in California. My pasty-ass white family got here after slavery. So nobody in my family ever owned a slave. Why should I, who's never owned a slave, have to give anybody any money in any form who never were slaves? It doesn't make any sense to me. Now, I don't fault the people who want to take the money. If somebody wanted to give a big steaming pile of cash to me because something bad happened to somebody 100, 200 years ago, then I would take the money. I would put it in my pocket and go, and I would go before the media and say, oh, the suffering that my family had to, it's awful what I had to go through. But the reality is these people are getting money because nothing happened to them. Now, a news outlet that covers Evanston, it's in Illinois, spoke with local residents about housing affordability amid a black exodus, raising concerns from the residents. According to community activist Malika Gardner, by the way, if you see the word community activist, just supplant unemployed. because that's basically what they are. But anyway, it's become more about green than black. Get it? Money. It's about the money and who can afford to stay here. The Right Reverend Michael C.R. Neighbors, the president of Evanston's National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, believes the city is losing a stock of our diversity, saying we have not been able to replace blacks who are moving because housing has just gone up out of this world. Yeah. By the way, that's happening to everybody, by the way. That's happening to everybody. Housing is unaffordable all over the place. The only people who are happy about that are real estate agents. But housing is out of control everywhere. It's not just a black thing. It's not just a minority thing. And it also, by the way, doesn't mean you deserve any money at all because you can't afford. I'm trying to draw the line here, right? I'm trying to draw the stupid line between reparations, stupid people who want them, and how housing prices today impact whether or not somebody was a slave 150 years ago. Anybody wants to explain that to me? Because I don't get it. Well, my great-great-great-great-grandfather was a slave. That's why I can't buy a house in 2026. That makes no sense to me. Accordingly, he goes on to say that for blacks who have been here for a generation or more, their parents or grandparents probably bought homes for a fraction of that amount. Yeah. So did my parents. So did my grandparents. My parents bought their first house in the way back in the 1900s, in 1972. I think it was 1972. They bought a house in Southern California for $21,500. My brother owns that house now. When he retires in a couple of years, he's going to sell it for $1 million. Do I get reparations for that? I didn't think so. Because reparations are, again, what's the word? Stupid. That's what they are. According to council members, neighbors, the reverend said, beyond zoning, some community members said the city's reparations program could also help alleviate affordability pressures. So that giving somebody a pile of money is going to alleviate affordability issues. He's 100% right about that. It's just they're giving money to people who don't deserve it because nothing happened to them. My ancestors are dead, too. Should I get a pile of money? They had horrible bad things happen. I can't talk about it on here. I don't get a pile of money for that. Neighbors said the program is a major important step to address population shifts. I don't think we should pay people money to address population shifts. I think people should live where they can live. You buy the house that you can buy. You live the life that you can afford to lead, and it doesn't mean you get a big pile of money because you can't get something. You can move to Detroit. We talked about that last segment. Detroit, their last hour. Detroit's a horrible place, and they want to pay people to move there. Now, what Evanston, Illinois is doing is they've issued $25,000 to 44 residents in reparations payments. The city's reparations committee announced this just last month. So far, at least 137 people that nothing happened to have received reparations payments totaling $3.47 million. And more people that nothing happened to are expected by year's end, reaching 170 recipients and about $4 million allocated to people that nothing happened to. Nobody was a slave, so nobody should get any money. Nobody alive today. Obviously, there were slaves. I can see that being pulled out of context, and I have to defend myself. Now, the program, which launched in 2019 to address past racial discrimination, provides $25,000 direct cash payments to black residents and descendants of black residents who nothing happened to. Have I made it clear that we're giving money to people that nothing happened to? Is that clear to anybody? and they want to give money to people that nothing happened to. Black residents who lived in Evanston between 1919, when there was no slavery, and 1969, where there probably weren't any living slaves left. So again, people that nothing happened to. What's going to happen? If we get, because there's boneheaded ideas for reparations, right? They're buying votes. That's all reparations is. They want to buy votes. Democrats do not want to give reparations, by the way. They want to keep dangling the fish hook out there and make people think, no, just the dumb Republicans ain't giving you money for something that didn't happen to you. They want to do that. But if we give people reparations, they're not going to have anything left. They don't have anything left for anybody to vote for them on. So we'll talk about this if you want to, if you'd be in favor of giving people reparations. If not, we'll move on to some other things. I'm Casey Bartholomew. I'm sitting in on Talk Radio 1210 for Walter Sterling on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Detective!
Vicky Ferrari!
On tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I want to give you a behind-the-scenes tour into an NYPD precinct's lounge or break room. Now, most NYPD precincts have some type of place where the cops can have their meal hour. A lot of times, guys don't want to go to a restaurant or a diner because you're in uniform, there's a marked police car outside, and sure enough, someone's going to come inside with a question or they want someone arrested. So most cops, in the NYPD at least, when it's their meal hour, they'll ask the dispatch, can I take my meal? They'll tell them, yeah. And they'll go into the station house. Now, most NYPD break rooms are in the basement. I've seen a couple on the second floor. When I was in the 4-2, I was amazed that when you looked out the window on the second floor, you could see on the roof of the first floor all the empty beer cans from the cops from the 1970s. But later on in my career, when I worked in different places, most of the time the break rooms were in the basement. And usually what happens is cops will donate things like a couch, a love seat, and they usually got burn marks on them or scratch marks from the dog or the leather is worn off. But hey, it's a port in the storm. Then you got the table. The tables are usually disgusting and filled with gouges and nobody really cleans it. There's usually a refrigerator in there that's got some form of smell and black mold, and no one is going to clean these things. Even the cleaners in a precinct stay the hell away from the NYPD precinct break rooms, although there was one guy I saw that used to try to lift up the seat cushions for extra change. Then you got a microwave that usually smells like burnt cheese or popcorn. And again, no one's going to clean this thing because that would just be too much work. But the crazy thing about the break rooms is most of the time, the cops got the TV on very low, and the lights are dim in there, and there's usually, you know, a cop catching a couple of Z's on the couch, whether it's one of the inside guys that's hiding from doing work or a cop on patrol who on his meal hour just wants to get a couple of minutes of sleep. But every now and then you'll get a guy going through a divorce or is a quasi-alcoholic, and basically they live down there until someone figures it out and tells the commanding officer and tells them to get the hell out of there. I once worked in a precinct where there was an old-timer living for months. He was going through a divorce, had no money, his check was getting garnished, his kids weren't talking to him, and if you went down there and put on the TV, he'd start screaming at you. He also had furniture delivered to the precinct, and he put together like a little IKEA desk set for himself down there. So you never know what you're going to find in an NYPD break room. So for more behind the scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD Behind the Blue Wall of Silence.
This is the show that's setting the trend. Across the nation, it's setting the trend. It's the bright, exciting sound of Sterling Every Damn Night.
Casey Bartholomew sitting in on Sterling Every Damn Night. You can give us a call, 855-839-1210. It's 855-839-1210. You know, I couldn't remember when AI was a fantasy. And it wasn't that long ago. I'm not talking 10 years. I'm not like 3 years ago. I remember talking about it on the air I was on the air in Dallas. And I was talking about it. I was like, this is never going to be a thing. We're going to get it under control and everything will be okay. And boy, was I wrong. I could not have been more wrong. I was the wrongest of all of that. And now AI is everywhere. It's on my phone. It does jobs. I had a buddy who did, who had this vast voiceover network, you know, reading commercials and stuff like that. And he made a ton of money at it. And then he didn't because you could just type in and get AI to do things. And rather than dealing with some temperamental, quote unquote talent, you could just type into AI what to say. And if they said it wrong, you type it in again and you never got argued back with or anything like that. And he, had to go find something else to do because of that. And AI is all over the place now. It's kind of cool. It's like I make pictures and things, with it. My daughter's getting married, in, 20 days. My daughter's getting married and her fiance is a huge Simpsons fan. So I took the ChatGPT and I said, I took their engagement photos and I said, can you turn these pictures into Simpsons? Because he's a huge Simpsons fan. And it did it. And then I printed them out and put them in a frame and gave them to him and he was in heaven. That's how easy that stuff is. And I don't pay for any of the AI stuff. So I don't get any like music videos or anything like that done. But if I wanted to pay whatever a month, I absolutely positively could get that done. Right now I do free stuff, but I absolutely positively could. And it's going to take over a lot of jobs, and I think we're going to have to figure that out. But more than one in four Americans who use artificial intelligence at work say it has replaced some of their daily tasks. This is a new survey that shows more employees are turning to the technology in everyday life. I was talking to my brother. My brother's actually driving in for the wedding and he didn't even use GPS because he was trying to figure out where to go. They're driving and it's a 1500 mile drive. And he's just typed in, hey, ChatGPT, I would take me here the quickest possible way. And it gave him a list of directions. I just type in into the GPS, but he's weird with the way he does things. So he went off and did that and that's there. So I use ChatGPT in my everyday life, too. If I'm sending an email to someone, I'll like, eh, that sounds stupid. And I'll run it through ChatGPT and have them deal with it. And they're smarter than I am. AI is smarter than you. I think that's the hardest thing people have with it. But the survey found that half of U.S. adults reported using AI tools in the past week. There was even there was a nearly even split of employed users who said they use it at least as much for work as for personal tasks, and those who reported primarily personal use. Who's using it for primarily personal use? If you're only using it for primarily personal stuff, somebody at your office is using AI. It may not be you, and they might, that may not bode well for you. But somebody is using AI for business if you're not doing it. It was like 51% to 47.1%, respectively. Findings also pointed to a shift in how the technology is impacting workflows among those who regularly use it. More than a quarter of employed users, that's 27%, said AI has automated some of their existing tasks. That's bad. That's Terminator level, right? That's going to take over because we can't do anything. I don't think they're going to let that happen. People get paranoid, and I talk to people about this, and they don't believe me. But I don't think that that's going to be allowed to go. We're starting to get regulations on AI, and we're starting to get rules put in place on AI. And I have a feeling that something's going to have to pop up, because if we allow AI to do too many of the tasks that we do, we're not going to be making any money and we're going to have to find something to do. So I think the brakes are going to have to be put on some things along the way. I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't know what they're going to try to make it look like, but I think it's problematic if AI does too much, because then what do we go do? Then what do us human animals go do? Because they're not going to pay us just to sit around. I don't think. Because if they do, I will sign up for that job. They're going to force us all to go be air traffic controllers. But I don't think they're going to do that. But either way, they're going to have to find some way to regulate it and balance it out so that we're all still have jobs. Because there's a lot that AI can do that takes away a lot of what we do. And that's problematic and scary to people. And I think it should be. But 27% say that AI has automated some of their existing tasks, such as summarizing a document. Yeah. Compared to nearly 68% who said it has not, which leads me to believe that the 68% who said it has not don't know Someone else is doing it. Someone above your pay grade is doing it. Not only it's doing everything, but if you're working in just a general office setting and you don't think somebody is using AI above you in a manner that will eliminate possibly your position, I think you're kidding yourself. Now, some employees reported doing tasks because of AI, because of AI, such as data analysis that would ordinarily require coding knowledge. I haven't done that. I make pictures and I ask it weird questions when I get bored. And I don't pay for it, so there's a limited amount of stuff you can ask it. But either way, I do that kind of stuff. I play with it. It's a toy for me, I guess. The share of users who reported using the tools as much for work as for personal tasks went from 58% among self-paying subscribers to 76%. For those with an employer-provided subscription, a little more than one-third of free-tier users say the same. I'm a free-tier user. I'm not paying for it. I'm not paying for something that's going to take my job away, because I think it could. Either way, let's face it, a trained monkey could do my job. Come on. Either way, I think it's going to come in and take over a lot of stuff, but I'm a free-tier user. I'm someone who doesn't want to pay for things. AI wouldn't cough on the radio, but it's dry where I am. Microsoft Copilot, which comes bundled with a Microsoft suite of productivity tools and cloud-based services, was the most used AI tool among employed U.S. adults for work. According to a survey, OpenAI's ChatGPT and Google Gemini rounded out the top three. I use ChatGPT and Meta. Those are the two I use. And again, I play. I have it put me in pictures looking much buffer than I actually am. And then I look at it and go, what could have been? And then I get on with my day. Something good comes on TV. I don't know. But either way, I'm curious if there's anybody out there who's worried that AI is going to take over your job. And at least, like I said, I don't think, you know, this could be me being naive. It would not be the first time. But I don't think that, like I said, the regulations are coming. They're going to start clamping down on things. I think unions are going to play a role in that, trying to make sure that if you have a union job, that they can only use AI for a percentage of things. Because if they don't, I mean, look at what I can do. Just as an idiot using free tier services, they call them. I won't pay for anything like that. If I paid for it, I could have it do a whole lot more. The free stuff's kind of limited, but I could have it do a whole lot more. And I do, like I said, I do fun stuff. I do weird stuff with it. But even then, it's quite a bit you could get done. And look at what it can do. If we start creating a situation where AI can do all of the job, if you do that, then they're going to have to find something else for the human animals to do, because they're going to have to pay us something so we can buy food and such. Even customer service, I've noticed. Because one of the things I was reading was saying, oh, customer service, AI will never replace customer service. It does. If you've ever gone on a website, if you've ever gone on a store website and they have a chat, they're supposed to tell you, I think, and they usually do, that it's a work model. ChatGPT model that they're, AI model that you're talking to here. They will answer your questions and they'll apologize up and down, for what you're dealing with. They'll apologize for not being able to answer your questions, and they'll apologize for not being able to give you any satisfaction, because no customer service ever does that. But what they do is they just are spitting stuff out and pre-programmed answers that are already in there. So for the customer service stuff that people actually want to deal with a human being, you're usually, if you're doing chat, you're usually talking to the robots and the Terminators, and it's usually in such a way that you're going to have to suffer. So I'm just curious about that. 855-839-1210 is the number here. That's 855-839-1210. When we come back, someone has come out recently. By the way, this was not a surprise to anybody, but someone has come out and suggested that they are thinking about running for president again. You probably know who, but we'll talk to you about that coming up. I'm Casey Bartholomew. You're listening to Sterling Every Damn Night.
It's Sterling Every Damn Night. He's on every damn night.
He takes to the air without a care and does his nightly shows. And the Midnight Misfits all tune in for reasons nobody knows. It's Sterling, every damn night, he's on every damn night.
Casey Bartholomew sitting in on Sterling every damn night. Give us a call, 855-839-1210. That's 855-839-1210. Shout out to all of our listeners on KMOX in St. Louis, KDKA in Pittsburgh, KXNT in Vegas, KMBZ in Kansas City, Missouri, and WGAN in Portland, Maine, as well as WPHT in Philadelphia. Happy to have you all here. I saw this. You probably heard this. Came out end of the week. Kamala Harris said on Friday that she might run. Let me say this. Kamala Harris is running for president, all right? She's out there all over the place. She's making silly little videos, just ridiculous little videos. And anybody who's out there or putting themselves out there in any particular way, and you can always tell, used to be the presidential cycle kicked off like it's in 2028, right? After the midterms. That's when people would start, no particular reason. I'm the senator from Montana. I just thought I would go to Iowa. Thought I'd swing by New Hampshire for no reason. No, why? Why do you ask? I don't know. They get people talking about you and things like that. Now it just goes. The election cycle is constant, right? But what's going on? Kamala Harris is running for president. Okay. And as a Republican, and I am a Republican, as a Republican, there are some Democrats I'd rather not see run. But when it comes to Kamala Harris, I want her to run for president and never stop running for president. She was a constant source of laughter and material when it came to running for president. And now she's written it's already been out for a while now, her goofy book, 107 Days. Her version of Hillary Clinton's What Happened, which is just a book full of excuses for why she lost the election, and none of them were her. She'd say they do that fake thing. Well, I was the candidate, so the blame falls on me. But it's my fault, but everybody else did everything wrong. So she's going around and giving her speeches, and people are seeing it, and she's having a fun time. And at this point in time, she's coming in, I think it's first or second in most polls, but she's not polling through the roof, right? They're like 28%, something like that, 28%. And right now, it's all name recognition. That's the only thing people are saying. I know that guy. It's not going to come down to it. But she is a constant source of humiliation and conversation because she's just a buffoon. That's all she is. She was the major nominee for a major party, and she's never won a presidential primary, not a single one. She was telling a gathering in New York that she's considering mounting a third bid for the White House, saying, listen, I'm thinking about it, in response to a question from Reverend Al Sharpton, who's also an idiot, at the National Action Network's conference in Manhattan. She said, let me also say this. I served for 4 years being a heartbeat away from the presidency of the United States. I spent countless hours in my West Wing office, footsteps away from the Oval Office. I spent countless hours in the Oval Office, in the Situation Room. I know what the job is. I know what it requires. She went on to say, I've been traveling the country the last year. I've been spending a lot of time in the South and many other places. And the one thing I'm really clear about also is the status quo is not working and hasn't been working for a lot of people for a long time. She certainly sounds like a candidate. I don't know why they would give her another chance. I mean, she didn't just lose to Trump. She got her ass kicked by Trump. All right. She didn't just lose. She got spanked in that election. You can put whatever she said. It was the closest election of the 20th and the last 20 years, whatever the case may be. She got spanked hard. She probably had to call Trump daddy a couple of times. That's how bad that went. She got destroyed in 2024 after they forced Joe Biden out, and she unsuccessfully ran for the Democratic nomination in 2020 before Biden selected her as his running mate. She's never won a single primary in any presidential election toward getting the nomination after being anointed in 2024 where she didn't run. And she's been... they say she's kept a relatively low profile, except she's been out on a speaking tour for her 107 Days book, again, full of excuses and assigning blame to everybody else after getting destroyed by Trump. But she's out there, and she got asked the question. She's absolutely running for president. If I wanted to look at a news cycle, I'd probably give you a list. Cory Booker's running for president. That's what that whole thing, that whole... I can't think of the word. Filibuster thing. I can't think of the word. The filibuster. The 25-hour speech. That was all about getting his name back in the news. That's all that was when it came to Cory Booker. All right, coming up, we're going to talk to you about the average new car costs. I am Casey Bartholomew, sitting in.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Sterling every damn night. I'm Casey Bartholomew, sitting in for Walter Sterling. Bunch of stuff still to get to. We're going to talk about how the average cost of a new car is now $50,000, which means I ain't buying a new car.
Sterling every damn night.
Oh, yeah!
It's Casey Bartholomew, because Walter's forgotten who is supposed to do Sterling every damn night.
Starting every damn night, Casey Bartholomew sitting in. Give us a call at 855-839-1210. Car ownership has long been integral to the American dream, but as automakers slash the production of inexpensive models to cater to customers who can afford oversized pickups and sport utility vehicles, buyers find themselves facing sticker shock at the same time that they're already frustrated by lingering effects of high inflation. Of course, war in Iran has led to ridiculously high gasoline prices. Consumer prices rose 3.3% in March, the biggest yearly increase since May of 2024, while new car prices were up 12.6% from a year ago. The Labor Department reported that Friday. That's weird, because if it's too expensive to run something, you'd think that the prices would go down. And maybe they will eventually. Doubt it. But you would think that the prices would go down because it costs too much to run your car. Because gas costs a lot now. New vehicles are now selling for an average of nearly $50,000. I have never spent anywhere near that for a new car. And I don't think I ever would. I bought a Ford Escort. Anybody remember those? In 1990. And it didn't have air conditioning. And it was a four-speed stick shift. And it cost me $4,500. I didn't have a great job back then. And I was just a kid, just a punk kid. And it ended up, the car payment was $155 a month. And I struggled to make that, man. And I had a five-year loan. I ended up paying it off early because I got a better job. After that, I bought a brand new Honda Accord. And I think I paid $18,000 for that, but it was a much nicer car. That was 5 years later, but that was a different level of car. It was a much nicer car, and I was really happy with that. But that's the most I've ever paid for a car. Ever since then, that's not true. I got a Honda Odyssey minivan when I started having kids, and I think that cost me about that in 2002. 2, and I think that cost me 20. I think I paid 20 for that, and I was happy for that. But outside of that, I haven't bought a new car in I don't know how long. They make cars so much better now that they last forever. So if you can find a used car with less than 100,000 miles on it, which is what I still that line that I don't like to cross over, then they'll run for a good long time. I remember I bought a what year was this? I think it was a 2007, and the year I bought it was 2017, and it only had 62,000 miles on it. Literally, an old lady was driving it to church all the time. It was a Toyota Camry, and I bought that. It was a little white car, and I really liked that. But I haven't bought a new car in forever, and I, just because it's getting ridiculous what they're charging for things. You can't afford a $50,000 car. That's crazy. But that's up 30% in 6 years, and average monthly payments based on 10% down. So you'd put $5,000 down on a $50,000 car, and a 6 year note, that's a loan, that would cost you $775 a month. I don't think I can afford a $775 car payment every month. That was, I remember my first apartment was $1,200. And that's almost that much. And I didn't even like paying $1,200 a month for an apartment. I own a house now, so it doesn't cost that much. But either way, looking for something on the cheap end, the share of vehicles listing for less than $30,000 is about 13%, which is down 40% 5 years ago, per the car review site Car Gurus. I'm still choking on that. 50 grand for a new car? I bought a used car last year. What is it? I'm not a car guy, by the way. I should point that out there. I've never been one of those guys who, hey, look what I got. It is this many axles or, is that a thing? That's a thing, right? I don't know anything about cars. I'm lucky I know where to put gas in it. But beyond that, beyond putting gas in it and starting it, and driving it, we have now exhausted my car knowledge. I'm not a car guy. I don't care what cars are. As long as it gets there, it starts when I put the key. I don't even have a key. I have a fob. As long as it starts when I sit there with the fob and takes me to where I want to go, I'm happy. I don't care about cars, but I know it's a Nissan. It's a kind of car. It's a kind of Nissan. Does that help anybody? Probably not. Anyway, it didn't have 100,000 miles on it. It's a 2015. I paid about $14,000 for it, and we jumped on it because we saw it and we found it, and it wasn't listed on the website yet. We had gone to the dealership and it was there, and we were like, that one, what's that one? And we just did everything worked out right. And it's been a great car. I really like the car, but, I would never pay $50,000 for a car. When they say used cars that are out there, they're talking dealerships, right? You can always find somebody who has a hunk of junk, which is what I used to drive when I was younger. But buyers are spreading their payments out longer. Consumers are choosing 7-year loans to make up more than 12% of sales, up from nearly 8% a year ago. I would lease a car, I think. And I'm used to be adamantly opposed to car leases. Because you pay on that car forever, and then when you're done, you don't have a car. And then you just have car payments forever. But if you've got a 7-year loan for a $50,000 car, and then you've got to pay that off, by the time you pay that off, you drive it around anywhere. If you drive any distance at all, you're going to probably need a new car by the time that's done. You may as well lease a car if you can get away with that. I don't know. That's what makes sense to me. But 7-year car loans? The most I've done is 5. I did 3 once. That was good. But I can't fathom a $50,000 car. I wouldn't want to drive it. Be afraid to get dust on it or something. I'd be afraid that I'd hurt it. And the insurance rates for a $50,000 car got to be crazy. Now, that's the average cost, right? So, you know, it's like half or below that, half or above this. So there are cheaper options out there somewhere. Some domestic car carriers, they're the ones that are especially higher. It's almost like getting the 1980s all over again, right? Early 1980s. I was just a little kid in the early 1980s. But I remember talking to my dad about it. It's like, yeah, American car makers couldn't make a car that anybody wanted to buy because they got horrible gas mileage. And that was when the first Iranian oil issue with OPEC and all that happened. So now now we're in the same boat again, where the foreign cars, Hyundai, it's the Korean cars, which are big now, are getting better gas mileage and are better made and are holding their value better than American-made cars. So that's problematic. But you could probably still get a car for around $30,000. But even that is bothersome to me. I would just as soon look for a used car somewhere at a dealership, make sure everything's working, make sure it has some kind of warranty. Like I did last year, I got a $15,000 car, $14,000, something like that. We ended up with a car that only had like 78,000 miles. I don't drive a whole lot. I live close to everywhere I go. So that's a year and it had like 78,000 miles on it. That's 2 years old. Actually, I bought that 2 years ago. So that's like 78,000 miles. It doesn't even have 100,000 miles on it yet because I don't drive anywhere. So this car is going to last me forever. I'll get a new car when I am forced into it. But that's what you're looking at if you want to buy a new car now. An average price is about $50,000, which is ridiculous. All right, 855-839-1210 is our number here. When we come back, we're going to talk to you. I've talked about this before on the show, but tomorrow is the day. Actually, today, I guess, is the day. Speed cameras are going to start popping up in places like Philadelphia, and we're going to talk to you about that. I'm Casey Bartholomew, sitting in for Walter Sterling on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Midnight misfits, tonight. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Every Damn Night. My name's Casey Bartholomew. I am sitting in tonight. I know I said I was going to talk about something else. I was going to talk about the speeding cameras. Nothing you can do about it. I've talked about those before. They're out there. They're going to pop up all over the place. But I saw this story, and it made me realize what a horrible person I am. And I am. But a fast food worker and good Samaritan made sure a customer was blessed with relief. This happened over Easter weekend. I just saw the story today. But on April 3rd, Jaden Citron, a Chick-fil-A worker in Kinston, North Carolina, became a hero to a customer who had misplaced two envelopes containing $9,833 in cash, so roughly $10,000. He found them in the morning in the men's restroom. Why are you taking $10,000 in cash in multiple envelopes into a bathroom at a Chick-fil-A? That's one of those times where I almost say you almost deserve to lose that. According to the employee Citron, he said they were on the floor next to the toilet. My first thought was just like, okay, no, this isn't happening. Something is wrong. You took $10,000 in two separate envelopes into the bathroom and you put them on the floor next to the toilet. A lesson needs to be taught, I think. One envelope was labeled First Citizens Bank with $5,000 inside. Another was labeled Truist Bank. Never heard of it. And had $4,333 inside. Rather than pocket the money himself, he picked it up. Ew. It's on a public toilet floor. Maybe I wouldn't keep that. But he picked it up and brought it to Human Resources. John McFall, the owner and operator of the Kinston, however you say that, Chick-fil-A, says he's grateful for employees like Citron. Said, acts like this reflect the values of our restaurants, aim to uphold each day. And we're proud to see that lived out here at Chick-fil-A Kinston. McFall said that. Citron said the money was returned to its owner, who offered him $500 for returning it. He said, I don't want anything out of this. He declined the money several times before eventually relenting. I'd have taken it. I would like to sit here and tell you that if I found $10,000 in envelopes on the floor of a public restroom, that I would immediately go to the proper authorities. I would like to tell you that. I don't think I would. I honestly don't think most people would. I know everybody says that right now. Everybody's going to go, oh, you're a horrible human being. You're just awful. Taking that money that was on the floor of a bathroom, toilet, in envelopes. Yeah, you're all saying that now. I think I'm the only one being honest because I'm the only one saying, yeah, I find a pile of cash on the ground, I'm taking it. And I might put it in my pocket. I would say, if I gave odds, I'd say it's like 80-20 in favor of me keeping the money. I know that makes me a horrible human being, right? I know that makes me an awful person. And people, every time I've talked about things like this, everybody always says, what do you tell your children? Well, I just wouldn't tell them. I just wouldn't tell them. I would say, God gave us this money. That's what I would do. I would lie something about religion to make myself feel better. But according to Cintron, the employee said, I was in the right place at the right time. But more than that, my faith teaches me to do what's right and to care for others. Okay, now he's making me feel bad. I don't have any. I mean, I have faith, but I don't. Yeah. I mean, I don't believe in organized religion, okay? I'm not an atheist. I say that and everybody says you're an atheist. I'm not an atheist. I just don't believe in organized religion because I got Catholic school literally beaten into me when I was a kid. So it soured me on a lot of stuff like that. But, you know, his faith teaches him to do what's right and to care for others, which is why he works at Chick-fil-A. Knowing how devastating it would be to lose something like that, I just wanted to make sure it got back to the owner. I'm grateful I could help. And I'm humbled by the response. This is the guy you like want dating your daughter, right? This is the decent human being you want around everywhere. But I know myself, and you may not want to admit this, but I know you. And I know you. If you walked into a toilet, sat down, not trying to be gross, looked to your side and found two separate envelopes on the floor in the toilet containing wads of cash, you'd pick it up, you'd put it in your pocket, wash your hands, look around a little bit, then you'd walk out into the restaurant and you'd look around the people. Do they look nervous? They don't look nervous. I don't think they're anyway. You just linger around a little bit to see. And then you would tell yourself, because I would, well, nobody ran back into the bathroom looking for this stuff. These people could be miles and miles away now. And if I were to go to the front and say, hey, I found a big pile of cash. Did anybody lose this? A line of people would say, yeah, I lost it. Because people suck. We do. As a species, people suck. Especially when it comes to money. On general issues, maybe we don't suck so bad, but generally speaking, human beings suck. And every so often, you're going to find a nice guy. What's this kid's full name? Jaden Cintron. Good for Jaden. And Jaden's parents did an excellent job raising him. And Jaden adheres to his faith. And I think that's fantastic, right? I just think that's 100% awesome and fantastic. I also think that most of us aren't like Jaden. I think that most of us, if we found the money, myself included, I'm not trying to say that I'm better than anybody. I'm not. I'm probably worse than all of you. But I think if most people found envelopes full of cash, especially in a fast food restaurant, you know what you do? Sit there and justify it. You'd pick the money up and you'd go, huh, why would someone have cash? Drugs. That's why somebody has this much money. They're buying drugs. If I give this money back to them, they'll go buy drugs. They might even sell them at a school. I can't have that on my conscience that I let somebody get this cash back and sell drugs at a school. That's what I would do. Crime is the only thing that people use cash for anymore. Everybody else has a debit card. If this person were not doing something nefarious, then they would be using their debit card. They wouldn't have envelopes full of cash. It is beholden to me to take this cash and run away really fast before anybody sees me in here. That's the way I would do it. All right. That's how I'm justifying it in my mind, by the way. I'm Casey Bartholomew in for Walter Sterling on Sterling Every Damn Night. Never gonna lose. Never gonna lose.
Shiesty. He's from Memphis, Memphis, Tennessee. That's how they say it there. It's not Tennessee, it's Tennessee. Like Hennessy, but it's Tennessee. All right. Pooh Shiesty, real popular rapper. He was discovered by a feller named Gucci Mane. Gucci Mane is not his real name. I know it's hard to believe. It really is Radrick Delanta Davis. Yeah, he's real popular. He is a producer and writer and creator. One of Atlanta's gems of a rap type guy. He's just doing his business in his studio. And there was an attempted kidnapping, allegedly. I go from there. Now, Pooh's real name, because you have to have a nickname in the rap game, is Lontrell Donnell Williams Jr. And so the Back in Blood, that's his big hit. And by the way, if you've ever gone down the YouTube thing, listen to some Pooh Shiesty, be prepared for a little bit of cussing. There's going to be a little bit of cussing. Not necessarily family-friendly fare. The Department of Justice. Yeah, it's 8 of the 9 suspects, by the way, picked up Dallas, Memphis, and Nashville. Yeah, it's the Department of Justice taking down Pooh, and he could be gone for life. Yeah. The remaining members of the group proceeded to rob other victims at the meeting with Gucci Mane of their Rolex watches, jewelry, cash, and other high-value items, including a platinum grill. A platinum grill. Shiesty's been on Gucci Mane's label since 2020. Yeah, here's the deal. Nobody likes their recording contract. It's a universal truth. But artists sign up anyways. You don't hear about Morgan Wallen robbing people. Okay, maybe he's had a couple of drinks, but he's probably not robbing people over his bad recording contract. Nearly all these recording contracts are terrible. Sometimes these musicians end up in debt and you think they're rich as hell, but they're not. Pooh Shiesty and his cohorts likely gone. Sad. From the champagne room, bumping and a humping. I'm Velo Hool. Strippers on the loose, Sterling, every damn night.
Oh, Sterling, every night. Florida stories, alligator swamps. Daily with these Florida stories.
I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Story. Thank you. Rabid bat clings to Florida woman's arm in Hillsborough County. The old rabid bat story. A Sun Center woman discovered a rabid bat clinging to her arm on Monday, according to health officials. The woman was helping her friend into a vehicle when something struck her arm, according to the Florida Department of Health in Hillsborough. At the time, she didn't see what it was, and she went home. So while at home, she went to the restroom and discovered that there was a small bat still clinging to her arm. How would you react? Scream, throw it across the room, maybe pet it, try and make friends? This is the quote from the Department of Health. This woman immediately squished it with a towel. Squished? Is this an official term they use, a zoological term they use in wildlife management? Squished with a towel? They test the squished bat, and it turns out it does have rabies, or did. And I'm not sure what they got going on in Hillsborough County, but according to this report, they've had 7 rabid animal attacks already this year.
Wait,
Hold my beer. Next Florida story. Elderly black woman says Fort Lauderdale, Wells Fargo refused to cash her check, and she called the cops. Let's look at the details here. 78 years old, former probation officer and assistant bank manager, happens to be black, stopped by Wells Fargo branch in Fort Lauderdale. She ended up spending 2.5 hours at the bank while employees refused to cash her check. And here's the kicker. They refused to return her driver's license as well. And apparently running her name, trying to find her ID, it must have tripped something. And obviously a false positive here because they never found anything.
But here's the kicker. The check is for $140. Y'all are making all this fuss over $140? If I was the guy behind her in line, I would have just given her $140 and said, get out of here. I'm tired of you wasting everybody's time. So this is kind of a silly lawsuit, but it stinks that she was wrongfully detained and they didn't give her her license. But listen, Wells Fargo, you've been signing people up for fake accounts. You've been signing them up for insurance they don't want. You've been making ghost accounts so you can get these bonuses. You've been fined $100 million there, $400 million over there, $1.5 billion over here. Don't you think you would kind of keep your nose clean after all that? Just let it slide. Are you getting a whole lot of 78-year-old people trying to rip you off with check scams for $140 a pop? I'm skeptical.
Wait. Hold my beer.
And finally, in today's Florida stories, we're going to end on a high note here. A mayoral candidate in Key West, during a debate, takes a call from God. This guy is what they call a perennial candidate. No one takes him serious. He runs all the time. He never wins. And Key West is kind of one of those eclectic places. It's not that big, so just a handful of weirdos can have a big sway on what's going on down there. And it seems like a pretty cool place because of that. Sloan Bashinsky is his name. During a debate for the city commission and mayoral candidates, his phone rings. He answers it and says, hello, what? God? According to a report in the Miami Herald, Bashinsky then talked about cuts to nonprofit funding and told God he thinks city officials have lost their minds. He's been telling the local media God told him to seek office. He's an advocate for Key West homeless. Sounds like a nice guy with his heart in the right place. And sometimes in Key West, these weirdos win. They have a history of doing that.
Hold my beer.
Florida Stories is produced by Spring Rock. I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
I'm Walter Sterling, and I am in the laundry room because I'm doing something with my pillow products that I can't do with other bedding products. I'm washing them. MyPillow now is introducing their most advanced sleep surface ever. My kids fight to have one of these. Now you can get the total body support you need and best sleep of your life. It helps relieve your pressure points by evenly distributing your body weight and regulates your body temperature for you as an individual. And boy, are we individuals. On the Great Shift, Walter Sterling Shift, we are individuals. The MyPillow mattress topper comes with a 10-year warranty. Your marriage didn't. It's made in the USA, and it's backed by Mike Lindell's 60-day money-back guarantee. You get your money back after 2 months if you don't like it. It's made with their famous MyPillow foam for superior support and durability, plus thousands of comfort supports to relieve all the pressure points in your back. Rejuvenates and extends the life of any mattress. Now, right now, you can receive one for as low as $99.98. This is way lower than it's ever been. You get a mattress topper for $99.98 when you use promo code WALTER. Call right now, 800-834-0876. 800-834-0876. Promo code WALTER. 800-834-0876. Promo code WALTER. Midnight Misfits can receive one for as low as $99.98. What? $99.98. Use the promo code WALTER. Call 800-834-0876. 800-834-0876. Promo code WALTER. This is the deal, buddy. Midnight Misfits special deal for the Mike Lindell mattress topper.
Last year, I had back pain radiating down my right leg. The pain was so bad, I was willing to cut my leg off to stop the pain. I could barely walk and had to stoop over when I did just to take pressure off the spine. I'm John Morgan of Morgan & Morgan. In my professional career, I've represented thousands of people who've had herniated discs and issues with their neck and back, but never fully appreciated what they were going through until it was my turn. It's like trying to describe colors to a blind person who's never had sight. All I can tell you is it hurt like hell, but worse. My daily walk was gone, and that bothered me a great deal. Then I thought of all of you and how much more devastating this type of injury could be for you. My life stopped. I now feel your pain. Just know at Morgan & Morgan, we got your back. I understand. Morgan means more.
Morgan & Morgan, 2005 Market Street, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania lawyer will handle Pennsylvania cases. Prior results do not guarantee a similar outcome.
Diabetes, high blood pressure, anxiety meds, everyone's on them. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe a bit porky, and you may even have type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term insurance may only cost you about $200 a month. Call Term Provider. Speak with Big Lou at 800-700-6898. Big Lou will find a term life policy for you even if you have type 2 diabetes, are overweight, or have high blood pressure. Term Provider has helped thousands of people like you who think they can't afford term life insurance. To buy $1 million of affordable term life for you, all you need to do is call Big Lou at 800-700-6898. Lou will make sure the scales are tipped in your favor. Call 800-700-6898. Big Lou will answer your call and work to fit you into a term life policy that you can afford. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds too. Call 800-700-6898 or biglou.com.
Sterling every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the Owl and Dawn.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my book, Sonata for Springtime. Natalie mimicked my earlier theatrics and flopped onto the bench with a huff. She reached behind the stand for her folder of music and, after closing my book and sliding it out of the way, spread it out in front of her. I took her previous position on the armchair and leaned against the plush cushions. It had been several weeks since I'd heard her perform, and the opportunity was worth the mortifying display of my own lack of talent. She started at the very beginning, her forehead creasing as she concentrated. I'd heard the first movement a few times before, so it sounded familiar to my ears. The introduction went well enough, but at the first, more complicated passage, she fumbled a few notes and let out a loud groan. Her lips pressed into a straight line, and she went back a couple of measures to try again. The second attempt ended the same way, and her hands dropped away from the keyboard. "I think you were right after all," she said, averting her gaze. "We should have given ourselves another week." "Maybe try the second movement," I suggested. She shook her head. "I'm sure it'll be just as awful." "Wait a minute." I did my best imitation of the same stern glare she'd given me when I'd wanted to quit. "You're not getting off so easy. Come on, you have to play something." A mischievous glimmer sparked in her eyes. "Do I?" I inched closer to the edge of the chair and braced my hands on my knees as if to stand. "Careful, or I'm going to come over there and subject you to the same cruelty you inflicted on me." One eyebrow flicked upward, yet I saw a hint of a smile. Challenge accepted. In a flash, I was behind the bench, hovering above her as she remained seated. "Hey," she squealed, giggling as I seized her forearm. "This is not how this is supposed to work." "Too bad." I gave her a gentle squeeze before repeating the motions on her other side. "Should have given that some more thought, too, before you all but chained me to the piano and demanded I perform." Unlike me, Natalie put up more of a fight when I tried to raise her arms. Her melodic laughter rang in my ears as she attempted to wriggle out of my grasp. When her efforts failed, she rotated her wrists to reverse our grip, and I almost stumbled into her as she yanked my hands toward the keys. "Maybe I'll make you play your excerpt a second time before allowing you to leave," she said. I struggled to gain an advantage, yet my awkward stance made it difficult. "You'll have to let me go in order to get the music out," or let me reach the piano, and then I could make my escape. Damn it, she muttered, though she didn't release me. You might as well surrender now. I bent down to whisper in her ear. Just give in and play for me. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and you're listening to an excerpt from my book, Sonata for Springtime, which is available at Amazon. If you'd like to hear some uncensored excerpts about what could be happening on that piano bench, go to patreon.com/Thea Landon. And don't forget, you can always send me your thoughts at smuttythea@gmail.com. Now, let's see what happens next. Instead of striking the keys, she leaned back into me and hugged her arms to her chest. Except my hands were still entwined with hers, resulting in a clumsy embrace with my arms draped around her shoulders. I fought to ignore the warmth radiating from her body as she reclined against me, yet I couldn't move. Natalie didn't pull away either. 100 conflicting thoughts flashed through my mind, but I was frozen in place, unsure of what to do or say. Before I could figure out an appropriate response, she rested her cheek along the inside of my elbow and exhaled a sweet, contented sigh. What is happening? My brain's attempts to sort through the current situation were drowned out by my heart threatening to explode out of my chest. For months, I'd been dreaming of what it would be like to touch her, to hold her, and in the moment, I was afraid to move and to disrupt this wonderful version of reality. As much as I would have liked to, though, we couldn't stay like this forever. But what did she want from me next? I swallowed and tried to breathe evenly in an effort to calm my racing pulse. It didn't work. Without releasing her, I stepped to the side, leaving one arm circled around her waist as I sat next to her on the bench. Wide brown eyes gazed at me, captivating me with their dazzling sparkle. I stared back at her in disbelief that she was looking at me in such a way. Hints of pink appeared on her cheeks as she bit her lower lip, yet she didn't draw back. In fact, was she leaning closer? My breath hitched in my throat, and I tilted my head toward hers. When I closed my eyes, her mouth pressed against mine, and the sensation of her soft kiss erased all of my prior fantasies. The world around us vanished as I focused on memorizing how amazing she felt. Her lips parted, tentatively at first, and I welcomed the intoxicating taste of her tongue. She probed into the depths of my mouth, and I countered every frisky swirl of her tongue with one of my own. We breathed in time with each other as we engaged in our explorations. My grip on her waist tightened, and she laid one hand on my chest, above my thudding heart. Our movements grew more frenzied, the electric energy behind the kiss intensifying. I threaded my fingers through her glossy hair to hold her close, needing to experience more of her. Oh, I think I need to stop here for tonight, but you know you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my book, Sonata for Springtime, which is available at Amazon. If you'd like to listen to some unedited, uncensored excerpts, you can go to patreon.com/Thea Landon, and you can always share your thoughts with me by emailing them to smuttythea@gmail.com.
I answer every email. I've got a pretty good website, waltersterlingshow.com, waltersterlingshow.com. And the greatest gift that you and I can receive is a request for help.
Sterling is brought to life by these creative people. Musical director Lee Harris. Technical wizard Dave Scalish. Operations Frank Canal. Sound mixers Sean Cicero. Sean Walsh. Andrew Torres. Voice actors James Parker. James Copeland. That's me. Randy Thomas. Charlie Van Dyke. Charles Van Sant. Robert Clotworthy. Peter Thiel. Erotic Thrills Thea Landon. Class Act Jill Brooke. Baked Goods Steve and Selena JB Bakery. Skullduggery Vic Ferrari. Blessings Father James Drucker. Meteorologist Dr. Dave Iser. Writer Jerry the Writer. Business Guidance Craig Kitchen. Program originated by Chris Olivero. Long-suffering executives David Yagaroff and Greg Stalker. With respect, Alex Bennett, Sally Jesse Raphael, and Gene Shepard.